This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one man band. I'm the number one fan. Me and my 88.
Welcome to episode 99 of Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. I do want to say that if you are listening for the first time, I have more than 88 friends. The 88 friends are the keys of a piano. And this is a show that gives me the opportunity to sing to you various songs that I've written over the last 5 decades and to have conversations with people who have wonderful, interesting stories about their journey of faith. I love to hear the stories of how God intervened in people's lives. This episode is with my brother-in-law from Wichita, Kansas. We're doing a few shows. I call it the Wichita Connection. We were there a few weeks ago, and we met a lot of wonderful people. But this is my brother-in-law, Dan Stark, from Wichita, Kansas. The question I've asked myself after having this conversation with Dan a few days ago is, how does a person move from a point of having absolutely no interest in God, no interest in church for years, and then overnight turns into a passionate, committed believer who lives the rest of their life trying to serve God and trying to tell others about Him? And that's the story that we're going to look at tonight. I want to start out with a couple of songs that I've written. The first one is a song off of my album called The Road Back Home. It's called Better Than That. You Can Live Better Than That. And the second song is from that same album. It's the title song, The Road Back Home.
And the kickoff was at noon. Fans began to gather, and the band played out of tune. The new coach told the players, we're standing on the brink. There's gonna be some changes made, starting with the way we think. Last week, somebody told me, last year we didn't do too bad. We ended 5-5. We gotta do better than that. You think you can do better than that? Gotta get a new mindset. No excuses, no regrets. You can do better than that. Why settle for the minimum? You can win and then some. Say goodbye to the past. You can do better than that.
There on that fence, if you live a life of sinning, you'll reap some sin. be a new beginning. Hey, you can live better than that. You can live better than that. Gotta get a new mindset. No excuses, no regrets. You can live better than that. Why settle for the minimum? You can live and then some. Say goodbye to the past. You can live better than that. You can live better than that. Say goodbye to the past. Kiss yourself without the last. Better than that. I'm living better than that.
Trade it all away. How could I have been so blind to not see where it would wind up? Bitter price that I would have to pay. Stretched arms, he'd welcome me. Why did I ever walk away? The road back home, that's the road I must get on. Take me to the road that leads to home. Take me to the road.
Let's go now to a telephone interview I had with our guest tonight, Dan Stark from Wichita, Kansas, my brother-in-law. I've been looking forward to this interview for a long time because this is my brother-in-law, my wife's younger brother, Dan Stark, from Wichita, Kansas. And I remember the night that Dan's life was changed forever. There's a song in the musical Hamilton called The Room Where It Happens. And I was in the room where it happened. So, Dan, the first time I met you was 1975. I'd come to Kansas to meet the family. I had never met my in-laws till about a week or two, maybe 2 weeks before our wedding. And I want to ask you something, just straight out. You guys knew that she was marrying a preacher, right, before I got there?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay, so you were not Christians. That your family didn't go to church or whatever.
Yep.
I've never asked you this, but were you guys kind of thinking I was going to come in with both barrels and start preaching to the whole family right off the bat?
Well, I was expecting someone with short hair because this is in the 70s, so I figured some short-haired, straight-laced guy and wearing a suit and tie, and here comes a guy with long hair and a beard and blue jeans and a t-shirt, and it kind of threw me off. And very down to earth, I was like, this guy's a preacher?
Well, if you remember, okay, the first thing I did at the meal, I knocked my glass of tea over all over the food.
But, and after that, I knew you fit in with the family real well after that.
So you grew up in Wichita, Kansas.
Yep.
And you had wonderful parents.
Yep. I had great parents. They taught me high morals. Back in the 60s and 70s, when all the chaos with the race riots and everything, my dad very clearly taught us kids that you don't look at a person's skin, color. You don't look at you look at the character and their integrity, the kind of person they are. You don't look at skin color, their religion, whatever. You look at the kind of person they are. And that always... that's one thing my dad really distilled into me, and a moral right and wrong.
Yeah.
And before I was even a Christian, you know, and
you know,
I was thankful that my parents was that way.
Amen. The thing about your parents, if I got this story right, they were part of a church when you kids were really little, or maybe even before you were born.
And before I was born.
And they went through what a lot of us have gone through, a terrible church split and Christians not acting like they're Christians. And I think your dad just had enough of it. And so they backed away. And so you were never raised going to church, right?
Never raised. I probably, before I came to Christ, I probably maybe was inside a church building maybe a half a dozen times, and that's weddings, funerals, and, you know.
Right.
An occasional Easter, you know.
And your dad and mom were tremendously moral people, and I remember commenting many times that they acted more Christ-like than probably most church people, even though they weren't professing Christ at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And that's how they lived their lives, especially my dad. He was, you know, he was a businessman. He was an accountant. And some of the things that he saw that in the business world just turned his stomach, because people would undercut people and lie and cheat and steal. And that was not his style, you know.
Your folks had three kids. You had Ann, who was 5 years older than Trish, and Trish was 5 years older than you. So you were the baby of the family.
Yep.
And so the first time I met you, the thing that sticks out with me, you were fighting mad at your sister, my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Because that day, I don't know if you remember this, she hopped on your motorcycle, and you were always a big motorcycle guy, and she went for a ride and didn't tell you, and I guess you ran most of the gas out, and you went out for a ride, and you ran out of gas, and you came back pushing the motorcycle, and you were fit to be tied at your sister.
Oh, yeah. She had a habit of running cars out of gas, too.
Well, and she's never done that since we've been married. That's at 47 years, so.
She must have learned her lesson.
Okay, I want to talk about you, Dan, because
okay.
Two things.
Okay.
She had two dreams about you. And one of them was that you were in a terrible motorcycle accident. Yep. And the other dream is she saw you worshiping God with your hands in the air, which was totally unlike your character at the time. You seemed not to be interested at all in God. Were you ever attracted to God as a kid or before you were an adult?
Yeah, one of the things I do have to say about my parents, even though they didn't go to church and they didn't profess to be, you know, Bible believing, they instilled, you know, who Jesus was. But, you know, I knew who Jesus was, that he was the Son of God and he died on the cross, but it wasn't real to me. And because my dad did a lot of stuff with us kids. I mean, he did Boy Scouts with me, played softball, you know, he coached softball with my sisters, and, you know, he was always around and did stuff with us. But he always taught us, you know, they taught us a little bit, but very rarely heard much about the Word of God or the Bible. And, you know, but they just, you know, explained to me at a young age who Jesus was, but, you know, it wasn't real to me.
Yeah. Did you know, have any,
hey, some dude.
Did you have any Christian friends?
I knew some people in school that were Christians, and some, you know, there was quite a few Christians in my school, especially in high school, but some of them were very, how do I want to say, kind of hypocritical, because I started doing drugs and drinking at 14, and some of the people that professed to be Christians was always wanting to buy weed from me and stuff. And I was like, you guys profess this, when you're around your friends, you don't want nothing to do with me, but when you're away from them, I'm your best buddy, you know? And it kind of,
yeah.
I believe you be real with real 100% of the time with everybody. And it just kind of bothered me, you know, but then those that I knew that were Christians had a real relationship and didn't play church. Those that had a relationship with Christ, I had a respect for, and they treated me very nicely, but it wasn't standoffish or like, oh, well, you're a hippie, you know, I don't want nothing to do with you. They were actually kind and acted like they cared for me, you know.
Right.
It was a different way they treated me, you know, and it always stood out how they were growing up. But I was too busy, you know, partying and having a good time, and, you know, I'll do that another time, you know.
Yeah. So you were 14 years old when you started drinking and drugging.
Yep.
And did it get worse and worse the older you got?
Yes, it did. I started smoking pot at 14, started drinking about 15. I guess probably I tried LSD. I did coke for a while. Coke was too expensive, so I it was just too much out of my league as far as money wise. And, you know, downers, speeders. I played football, so I was always speeding when I played sports. And it just, after about 12 years of it, when I was about 26, I started realizing, is this more to life than just partying all the time and, you know, feeling empty? And, you know, my friends were around when we were partying, but when I was by myself a lot. So it was like, okay, this isn't really, if this is life, is it really worth it?
Yeah.
And so and it started probably in 82 when I started having those feelings, and it didn't really fester until about 4 years later. And I think the kicker was, as you said, Trish had a dream about me being in a bad motorcycle accident. Well, in 84, I got in a bad accident on my street bike, and it was going down a country highway that out towards a lake, because I'd played competitive soccer, and we'd finished playing a tournament, and an indoor tournament, and a group of us was going to go out to the lake and had a keg party and was going to party all night and spend the weekend out there. And my girlfriend was on the back of the motorcycle with me, and we hit a chuck hole that took up the whole lane and was about 15 feet long. Well, at 55 miles an hour, the bike went into the rear wheel went up. She went flying off of it. The only thing that saved her life, I believe, to this day, is a helmet. And I stayed on the bike and rode it out, and it slid from what the police said was 90 feet past the hole. And I can testify that if it wasn't the Holy Spirit, it was most definitely something in me, in my brain, said, keep your head up. Let the pavement eat your body. Ride it out the bike. Do not fall off the bike or you're dead. So I rode it out, kept my head up, did not hit my head on the pavement, which even the doctors said was a miracle. And just had road rash, no broken bones, nothing major.
So you hung onto the motorcycle the whole time?
I was on the motorcycle the whole time. The pipe was burning my leg, and a buddy of mine was following us in his truck. He picked me up, picked the bike up off me. We rushed over to get my girlfriend at the time, and she was choking on the helmet. And she said, we revived her, and all she remembers was going down a bright light. And that's all she remembers. And then we woke her up. And I looked down and saw blood all over my hands because, you know, basically ate up skin, you know. And I kind of passed out, and they called the ambulance and hauled us to the hospital. And I started really realizing there's got to be more to life than what I'm doing.
So that was 1982, you said, right?
That 84. Was in 84.
84.
But it was about 82, yeah. And it was when I started getting, is there more to life than this?
Okay.
You know?
So if I remember right, the highway department had been working on the road, and they didn't put signs there at that hole. And do I have this right, that by the time your dad went out there the next morning, somebody was tipped off and they put the signs there to kind of hide that?
Yep. They yeah. sure did. And we tried to go to court. We wasn't trying to sue the Sedgwick County for a lot of money. In Sedgwick County, Wichita, we just wanted our expenses covered, our hospital bills, and a couple thousand dollars. And they got out on it on a technicality. So, you know, basically, it was kind of a deal where it's hard to win from big government when you try to sue them. You pretty much have to have a shut and dry case. So I learned pretty at an early age at that time, unless you have a clear cut case, you're not going to win something like that. So, and you know, we weren't asking for millions of dollars. We're just asking, hey, cover our time. I lost wages, you know.
But something told you not to let go and keep your head up.
Keep my head up. And I believe to this day, it was the Holy Spirit.
And well, I'm thinking about that verse. And I'm not trying to be silly, but he's the glory and the lifter of our head. So he kept you alive. And I remember that night, Dan, because I think I told you this. We were living in Massachusetts at the time, and we had decided to do some outdoor concerts there in Marlboro, right there in the parking lot of the Girls Club. And we had we started before the sun went down. And when the concert was over, it was dark. But I remember feeling two things that night. I felt joy because some people had come to the Lord, and that was really sticking our necks out to do something outdoors in Massachusetts in a parking lot. But when it was all over, I felt this unbelievable sense of evil, like danger, like something bad is going on right now. And of course, you had already had the wreck. Was the wreck at night or was in the afternoon?
It was in the dark. It was like about 10:30 at night. 10:30 at night.
Yeah,
it was dark.
I remember when we were shutting down from that concert. I thought, God, what's going on? And then we found out what had happened. And, you know, you got to give, I've got to give a lot of credit and honor to your sister, because when she had those dreams, it lit a fire in her to pray for you. First of all, that she had a sense that that the enemy wanted to kill you in a motorcycle accident, and you were away from God. And then the other dream was you were worshiping God, and that gave, and we prayed for years, you know, that those dreams, that especially the one with you raising your hands and worshiping the Lord, would come true. Do you remember when you came to see us in Indiana?
Yeah, I was 16 years old.
Yeah. Your grandmother was dying, and we were out in Wichita, and your mom said, why don't Dan go to Indiana with you and spend a week or two? And that was a great time. But I remember we invited you. We weren't going to push you, but our church met at a girls at YWCA.
Yep, Indiana.
Yeah, in the late afternoon, Anderson, Indiana. And I didn't know if you were going to go or not, but you kept saying, what will I wear? And you had cut off jeans. We said, just wear what you got on. And I think you probably thought that was really weird.
Yeah, it was, because I'd always, you know, the few times I went to church, you was dressed up. So I thought, it's okay to wear cut off jeans and a t-shirt, you know, okay, you know.
And that was the Jesus movement. That was the tail end of the Jesus movement. So when you walked in there, it was a motley-looking crew, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there was a guy that was wearing overalls and a T-shirt, so I thought, hey, I feel right at home here. And, you know, people were wearing, you know, you'd see a couple people with, like, a shirt and tie, and others would, you know, were wearing blue jeans and shorts and T-shirts, and I was like, you know, sandals, and I was like, okay, this is cool. I can handle this. This is my kind of thing, you know, and started to meet some really neat people. And I thought, okay, these people aren't weird or off the charts crazy, you know?
Yeah.
So it was my first really exposure to Christians in a different sense. And I really remember your old roommates, Don Weitzel and Larry, and they really made an impact on me even at 16. Just talking.
That's great.
Getting to know them.
And we were so encouraged because you said, you probably don't remember this, but you said, I'm not saying I'm going to become a Christian right away, but if I become a Christian, I would love to be a part of a group like this. I don't know if you remember telling us that.
I don't recall that. Yeah. But it wouldn't surprise me, because I know, I think it was either you or Don or Larry had asked me if I had, what I thought, and that this is pretty cool, and, you know, and they asked, are you ready to be a Christian? I said, no, not yet, you know, because I remember saying, no, not yet.
Who asked you that?
I think it was Dawn, but I can't remember.
Right.
But I said, no, I'm not ready. And I remember I was close, but then, you know, I was just like, no, I thought at that time I was going to have to give up too much of my party lifestyle, which I found out. Now I look back and thought, you know, how much my life would have been different at 16 if I would have gave my heart to Christ then and there.
Right. And it seemed to me and Trish that after that, you just kind of began to lose interest, and you seemed like were a little bit hardened. And I remember Trish talked to you several times, and you just didn't seem interested, even after the wreck,
yeah.
You know, right after that.
But
then something happened when you came to see us. What year was it that you came to see us?
1986, because I remember it was a couple of months before, and I'd been partying all night, and I used to go over to Mom and Dad's a lot of times on Saturday morning and do laundry, because, hey, it was free laundry. Mom would let me do laundry, and I wouldn't have to pay at a laundromat. So I went, saw Mom and Dad, and had, you know, usually got breakfast or a cup of coffee and did my laundry, and got to visit with Mom and Dad. And this is when, about 4 or 5 months ago, maybe 6 months ago, my parents rededicated their lives to Christ. And mom got baptized, and we were talking and about things, and she looked at me, because are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm okay. And she goes, no, you're not. I can tell you, I can read you. You're my kid. And I says, well, mom, I said, don't freak out, but I just kind of wonder if this is life, if this is what life's all about, is it really worth it? And she kind of looked at me and said, no, I'm not going to commit suicide. I'm just really pondering if this is what life's really worth.
Yeah.
Is it worth it? You know, because it's all I do is go to work and party, you know, and there's more to it. And I don't have, you know, any really deep relationships with people that I feel like I can trust. I have a lot of friends, but it all has to do with partying, you know. If I don't have any, I don't have anything to party with, they're not around, you know.
So how heavily were you into drugs and selling drugs at the time, 1986, when you came to see us?
I wasn't dealing too much at that time. I mean, I would deal a little bit just to, you know, make up for my habit. But, you know, I was addicted. I couldn't go a day without smoking a joint or two or drinking. I mean, I was the first one usually at a club and the last ones to leave. And I was always had a beer in my hand. So, you know, I didn't really like hard alcohol, but I drank it. But I always had a beer in my hand or a drink. And, you know, that's just how my lifestyle was. You know, I didn't know any better.
Right.
And so I always, you know, I had ways, you know, I dealt at times. And, you know, basically, like I said, it wasn't big time. And I didn't get into the heavy dealing. It was just enough to satisfy my.
Yeah.
Habit, because that's the best way it was. I was addicted, you know. And then right after that, when I was talking to mom, when we were at their house, and she goes, well, have you ever thought about giving your heart to Jesus? I go, oh, mom, I don't want to hear that Jesus stuff. I've seen so many falseness in this world. She goes, no, you need to really think about it. Why don't you go see Trish and Lawrence and check out their church up in Anderson? And I'm like, oh, well, I'll think about it.
Yeah.
Well, I pondered, you know, for a couple weeks, I thought about it, and I finally thought, well, maybe I ought to take a vacation. So I called you guys up, I think it was, and asked if you guys wouldn't mind me coming up and checking you out. No, that was not in Anderson. That was in Marlborough.
That was in Marlborough, Massachusetts. And you say it was 1986.
1986, and the end of April. No, it was in May, middle of May. And so I came up for about 12 days, and when I got on the airplane, I'd already smoked a joint with a couple of buddies of mine that took me to the airport, and I drank all the way up there. Cause I figured, well, I probably won't be able to drink when I'm at your house. So I'm going to put away as many as I can. So I think at the layover and on the plane, I was laying out some pretty serious cash on pumping as much booze in me as I could.
So you're stored up.
Yeah. I was stored up
for the droughts.
And the funniest thing was when I got off the plane, you and one of your deacons, Mark Dingman, was there, picked me up and took me back. And we were just talking, and you said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I want to get baptized. And you go, well, hold on.
Yeah.
We got to talk about that. Because that was on the back of my mind, you know.
That and, blew my mind when you said that. Because this is how you said it, Dan. You started saying, I want to go to Maine for a day. I want to go to maybe Cape Cod and maybe Vermont. I want to get baptized. I want to go to Boston. It, like, you just threw it in there.
Yeah.
And I thought, where did that come from? He's never talked about this before. But you were planning on getting baptized, right?
Well, I was really thinking about it that whole time. And I was just trying to, okay, you know, this could be a life-changing experience for me. And, you know, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it right. But I was like, I was just kind of still on the fence line. But what really changed my heart with what I saw was we were at the park, and that your church was having a picnic or something, that you were the pastor at, one of the pastors, and you guys were having a picnic. And we gathered around a circle, and people were praying, and there was prayer requests, and somebody had asked, somebody had said, well, my wife and I lost our car, and we have no way for me to get to work or get around, and just pray that somehow we can get a car. And after the prayer, after we were done praying, one of the guys in the church walked up and said, come over to my house, handed him a key, car keys, and said, there's a car in my driveway that we don't use. You can have it. And I was like, what? How in the world? Why would anybody give someone a perfectly good car for free? And I think they had to do it, give them a dollar for it, sell it to them for a dollar so the state of Massachusetts could get their tax on it.
Yeah.
And tag it. But I was still saying, a dollar? What? This is a perfectly good car. This car is worth a few thousand dollars. You could sell it. You could make money. But it really opened up my eyes to, as Christians, you see a need, you try to fulfill it. And that kind of blew me away. That was the first time I'd ever seen that in today's world, you know. I was like, it kind of blew me away.
I didn't know that story. I'd forgotten that. But I remember you, every now and then you would say, when are you going to baptize me? And I don't know if you remember, I said, Dan, we need to talk, because I'll be glad to baptize you, but we need to talk about a few things first. And I think we talked at our house on a Saturday night.
Yes.
And I explained salvation to you, that baptism is something you do afterwards as a sign, a symbol that you've turned to the Lord. Do you remember that night?
Oh, I remember clearly. That was when my life changed completely. That was, I do believe, May 23rd of 1986. If it wasn't the 23rd, it was the 24th.
Oh, that was the week of my birthday. Boy, what a birthday present for me to see.
Yeah.
And for Trish. And do you remember what you prayed? I don't remember what all we talked about. I do remember just explaining it to you. Did you repeat after me, or did you just say a prayer out loud, or how did that go?
I repeated after you, and all the drug addiction and the alcohol addiction totally went away. I had
really
no desire after that. And then I was kind of nervous about coming back home.
Yeah.
Because not only I got saved that day, that night, but the next morning I had a public confession of my faith. And then later that week or the next weekend, I got baptized.
That's right.
In Kenny Roberts' pool.
That's right.
He was going to take me to the ocean, but the ocean water was too cold because it was in May. And the water in his pool was real cold. It was freezing, but, you know, you and Don braved it out and baptized me.
And you know what? I remember we talked when we prayed at the house that night. And do you know what? I remember that I think one of our kids, I think Nikki.
Nikki, because she was the only, she was the your oldest one. She was like three or four.
She could hear you sniffling in bed, that you were kind of, I think when you went to bed, you were still sort of crying and sniffling. I remember she said, Uncle Dan was crying. But we thought about that, okay, it's good to do it publicly. And I remember I said to you, when we get to the end of the sermon, it would be good if you just come to the front and kneel. You've already saved now, but just to make it public. And you were probably the only one, the first one to go forward. And I remember you had cowboy boots on. I don't know why I remember that. But, then we baptized you. And it's just incredible what's happened in your life since. Do you remember what Paul told you? There's a guy in our church named Paul. He took you aside after you got baptized and you were getting ready to go to Kansas. Do you remember what he told you about friends?
I can't remember, but it probably stuck with me because I had so many people tell me, but it was Paul Poirier, wasn't it?
Barrio.
Yeah.
He said, Dan, I got to tell you something. When you go back to Kansas, you're going to lose every friend you've had.
And he was absolutely right.
Yeah, and he said, but don't worry about it because God will give you new friends and true friends.
That's right. He did say that. I remember someone said that to me, but I couldn't remember.
And I remember being really concerned. And we prayed for you. I don't know if you remember this, but we prayed a simple prayer that God would fill you with the Holy Spirit and he would lead you to the right church.
Yep.
So when you got off that plane in Wichita, what was the response of your friends? Did you tell them what happened?
Oh, yeah. A lot of my friends that I played soccer with, and basically I played soccer with them so I could party. And, one by one, they just kind of disappeared because I was not the life of the party. Because back when I partied, I was the life of the party. I'd be the guy that would get up, I'd be the crazy fool that would put the lampshade on my head and dance on the table, you know? I wasn't a violent person. I was kind of the fun-loving drunk. Druggy, you know, I was always looking for fun, being goofy, that kind of thing. So that was kind of my persona. And then when I would go to party, when I'd be invited to parties and all, I didn't want to smoke joint, you know, I didn't want to smoke weed or didn't want to do any lines or anything. All I want to do is tell people about Jesus. And they were kind of like, this is not the dude that I've hung around with all these times. So I just slowly quit getting invited to a lot of the parties and the get-togethers. And so, and plus after a while, I didn't even want to go, you know?
Well, did you feel times of real loneliness though?
I did, but you know, through it all, I realized that I had Christ in me and Christ filled that spot of loneliness. And then, you know, I got involved in a very good church and was involved in their Bible college, and a couple of the pastors, and I'll mention their names, Elton McMillan and Curtis Newby, just took me under their wing and really just taught me and really spent time with me. And then after about 3 years, I felt the Holy Spirit wanting me to move to Massachusetts. So about a year before I was deciding to make the move, I was getting counsel from my pastor at the time, Galen Dreyer, and he started mentoring me for about the last year that I was in Kansas, and said, Dan, I want to mentor you. It's not going to help me or the church, but it's going to help you when you go up to New England and help as you grow. And so he spent a year mentoring with me, spending once or twice a week with me, talking to me and asking how I'm doing, you know, basically just discipling me and mentoring me. And I'm forever grateful for what he did because he really pumped a lot into me and really made me kind of understand more of my walk with the Lord.
And so you stayed in Massachusetts how many years?
11 and a half years.
11 and a half years. We were trying to get you up there, and then we flew the coop and left you there.
Yeah, I lived with you guys for, what, a year, year and a half?
Yeah.
And then I moved next door, and then when Trish had her miscarriage, I was there and came home from work and watched the kids.
Yes, you did.
And that was a really tough time for everybody.
It was a horrible time. And you were there, and you and I went up to see Ray Bolts the night that Ray found out about the anchor holes. That was a pivotal meeting that night. So
yes, it was in Bangor, Maine, and he didn't want us to drive the five and a half hours home, so he put us up in a hotel room, and we stayed up till like what, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and got up and went to his other concert that he was doing that night, that afternoon.
So
that was pivotal.
Yeah,
and you know, I just want to share this, that during that time, through it all, I really learned a lot. I know I had a lot of prophetic words over me about being, I had a pastor's heart, that I could be a pastor and all that. But after living with a pastor for a year, year and a half, I didn't want to be a pastor. I said, God, if this is what, I don't know if I could handle it, because.
You saw the good, the bad, the ugly. You sure did.
I saw all the good, bad, and ugly. And so out of it, it wasn't so much me being a pastor, but me having a heart for pastors.
Yes.
To pray for pastors and to encourage pastors.
You certainly have that.
And that's been kind of my calling, you know.
Yeah.
say a good word to a pastor and, you know, try to be positive, because I've seen what, you know, pastors go through. Like you said, the good, bad, and the ugly. And some people think put pastors on a pedestal, same way of priests, and it's like everybody's human. They're human. People's going to make mistakes. And when a pastor lets them down, you know, they get lambasted. And it's like they're human. Everybody's going to let somebody down. I learned watching you how to have a respect for pastors and also to try to care and encourage them.
Well, you do that. You've always done that in my life and everywhere you've been. And you also saw what pastors' children go through in the goldfish bowl, as they say. You went to a different church after a while, a great church. I just want to mention their name in Massachusetts.
Metro West Christian Life Center. Now it's Metro Church. And Don Braswell was a wonderful senior pastor. He stepped down, and his son Chad is running the show. And I haven't been there since I left in 2001. But everybody in that church just had a special place in my heart. It was a family.
Yeah. And you're still loved there. I was there last year, and they all want to know how Dan's doing. Now, we're almost through with our time, but let's just fast forward just a little bit. Okay. There came a point where you decided it was time to go back to Kansas. Was that hard to do?
Yeah, it was, because I had developed such strong friendships and developed such a great friendships and a great church, a really thriving church, you know, seeing it grow and people excited about the Lord and excited about doing the Lord's work in the hard Northeast, you know, and seeing people come to the Lord. And it was tough, but I knew, I felt Spirit was telling me it was time to come. And then, you know, with mom getting sick and having health issues, me being the only single one, it was I was the right one to go and try to help out or be around to help her. And so I got laid off from my job and decided, well, it's time to go. So I packed up and moved home. And about a year later, I met my wife at 42 years. We got married in 2003, and we just celebrated our 19 years.
And her name is Tracy.
Her name is Tracy.
And you're 63 years old, but you have teenage daughters. And a 20-something-year-old son.
26-year-old son that just turned 26, Matt. And then I have 16-year-old daughter, Megan, and a 14-year-old daughter, Mackenzie. And trust me, at an older age, it's... it's different having kids at an older age. I love it, because when I was younger, I would have been a horrible parent, and I probably wouldn't have been a great parent. So that's about the best way of putting it. I wasn't ready to be a parent. I actually like being single. Times there was loneliness, but I enjoyed being single. But when it was time, it was time. I was ready to get married. And been happily married ever since. I love my wife, Tracy, dearly. She is 13 years younger than I am, and she keeps me hopping, and the kids keep me hopping. But I think that's what keeps me young.
Anything else you want to say? Then I've got something I want to say to wrap this up.
Yeah, those that are out there that don't know Christ or don't understand, let me tell you, he is real. You just got to trust him, because if it wasn't for him, I would not be where I'm at. I just wish at 16 I would have gave my heart to Christ at 16 instead of in 1986, you know.
Yeah.
So 19, I think it was 10 years later, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what I want to say then is, as we close, we went to church with you and your family 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
At a wonderful church in Wichita called Central Community Church.
Yep.
And I got to say, we were standing in that big church and wonderful worship music. There was a great band playing. And you were two people down from me, and you were standing right beside your sister, Trish. And you had your wife and your daughter, and your hands were in the air, and you were worshiping. Mm-hmm. And I was really moved. I began to cry because that was that dream. That dream, I looked and saw the fulfillment of that dream, two people down from me in that church. And thank God. God still speaks in dreams and visions. And that dream was a real faith builder for your sister to not give up on her family. And your mom and dad began to walk with the Lord in a wonderful way. And God's just been great. And I'm so glad you're my brother-in-law. You're not only my friend, but you're my family member.
I am. And I'm glad you're my family member. I don't know what I'd done without you and Trish in my life.
Well, hey, man, I love you. And I'm so glad that you shared with this. I think people are going to hear this and are going to be really encouraged.
I hope so, because that's what I want to do is encourage people with it.
Great.
Hope that it can change a heart or two.
Great. Okay, man. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. Love you, man.
You too. Bye.
So real to me, you've been so loving, so kind. Came at just the right time, and sometimes I sit and I wonder, where would I be right now if you didn't come along when you did? And just love me. Jesus, you've been so real to me. Been so loving, so kind, and you came at just the right time, and sometimes I sit and I wonder, tell me, where would I be right now if you didn't come along when you did? I want to thank you. I thank you for loving me. I know I'll never understand everything there is to know about your love. Mercy on a wretch like me. Thank you, Jesus. But Jesus, oh, you've been so real to me, and you've been so loving, so kind. Thank you, you came at just the right time, and sometimes I sit and I wonder, tell me, where would I be right now? today. I thank you for loving me. Just for loving me.
I love my 88, me and my 88 friends.